Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of Add to the Bone. Today, I got to play Curious George again. We hosted Jacob Ross, the CEO of Pebble Post. As you'll hear in the episode, they are reinventing the direct mail industry with a programmatic offer. Now, I know you're probably skeptical. I was too, to be honest. I imagine a much simpler model, with a marketing hype. But I was really impressed by the work they do, both from the product perspective and from the relevance perspective, how they speak the programmatic language and actually add value to the marketing mix with results, with analysis, return on ad spend, everything. Trust me, this is one of the most interesting episodes you'll hear on our podcast so far. So if you're Add to the Bone, let's begin. Hey, Jacob, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Adrian, for having me.
Great opportunity. I'm sure our listeners already listened to the intro, but I cannot help without starting and letting you introduce yourself because, you know, when we got the contact, I was blown away by your experience. And I just want to set, you know, the context for the rest of the conversation. So take the lead.
Oh, thank you, Adrian. And I appreciate the generous introduction. I'll try to do it justice. So my name is Jacob Ross. I'm the CEO of Pebble Post. And I'll talk a little bit more about Pebble Post with you. I'm looking forward to that. But I guess my background is I actually came into what we call ad tech today via the world of finance. So I was working on a trading desk, trading illiquid pink sheet securities. And I heard about this new exchange that traded 24/7 with more volume than all the world's stock exchanges combined. And it wasn't commodities, but in fact, ad space and ad attention. And so I got really excited. That was Right Media. And so I had the opportunity to join that company before the Yahoo acquisition at a time where we always said we're in the second inning of a huge revolution in if software is eating the world, then digital advertising software is eating advertising. And so it was a really exciting way to get introduced to the industry and work with some amazing publishers, agencies, and brand marketers on how they were transforming their business. And so that was my start. And then I had the good fortune to work at Demand Media, which was a next-gen publisher based in Santa Monica. We had about 160 million unique visitors that came to our websites every day, and we generated 9,000 pieces of content a day. So programmatic content and programmatic marketing combined, very powerful. And then I had the chance to join Criteo, a French retargeting company that was looking to break into the US and go global. Now everybody knows Criteo, but we had a lot of work to do to convince the world that retargeting was what the tagline at the time was, make display perform as well as search.
Nice.
And that's a claim, you know. So that was exciting. I worked at a number of other great ad tech companies, but now I'm happily here at Pebble Post for 3.5 years. And it's been an awesome adventure.
I can say that it's rare that you get to speak to somebody with your experience because you really covered all sides. You work publisher side, you work on the advertiser side, on the tech side. And we covered all of these kind of angles at the podcast, but never with one guest. So maybe before I ask the first or the second question, tell us a bit about Pebble Post. What does the company do? And then I'll ask the important first question.
Sure. So I was listing those companies not just to give myself any pats on the back, but because each of those companies, as you pointed out, was a frontier, really blazed a new path in the wilderness. So Right Media is the first and I would argue best ad exchange. Demand Media reinvented publishing online. Criteo really rethought about performance marketing and ad tech. And Media Math, which I spent almost 5 years at, has in many ways paved the way for most other ad tech companies in terms of its vision and philosophy on, under Joe. So what I was looking for in my next adventure was another frontier player, somebody who was blazing a new path and helping to kind of further this revolution of addressable digital marketing as a really effective way to connect brands and consumers. Anyway, so what Pebble Post did is Pebble Post looked at, we looked at a few different factors. One is consumers are spending more and more time online. That's where we're showing our interest, our intent. We're researching, making decisions. We all know this. We, screen time tells us how much time we're spending online.
Absolutely.
the second dynamic is the home, which is where I'm sitting right now, my home, is the command center and has been a rising level of importance for consumer choice, decision, discussions, purchases, not just for grocery, but for retail, for travel, for education. We decide what car to buy, what house to look at, where to go on vacation, all from our home. And so this is where consumers are in a safe haven way, the most kind of tuned in and engaged in terms of how to interact with brands and products and services. So anyway, that's topic two, is consumers make decisions at home. The third is that finding a high impact and relevant way to get in front of consumers is very difficult, but very powerful when done right. So what Pebble Post did is they took those three things and put them together. And they took basically the power of online intent, the ability to reach consumers at home, and the power of physical mail, and the ability to reach consumers at home with physical media, and put those three things together to reinvent direct mail in a totally new way, just as CTV has reinvented how consumers consume and brands advertise on that channel that's distinct from linear television. So anyway, so that's a long way of saying Pebble Post is a programmatic direct mail leader, and we invented the category. we have helped hundreds of brands power a ton of business, and it's been really fun to find an area that is really ripe for innovation. Direct mail is a huge category, but we've injected some new ingredients in there to help it behave differently and perform better.
Okay, so wonderful introduction. I think you... I haven't asked the question yet, but you already answered it, because I told you, you know, when we were preparing for the episode, that I wanted to understand your motivation after such a long career in the online, not just digital, but really online and action-based, click-based channels, now to switch to something that is not, maybe has intent. We'll talk about how you get the intent data, but is not a direct response channel per se, but more of an awareness or... awareness channel, right? At the end, there's no direct...
Yeah. Keep going, yeah.
Yeah, so basically the motivation, or you answer that by saying that your personal motivation was to go again to a company that reinvents or redefines a certain category. In this case, it really reinvents the category and adds all of the know-how from the online world into the, at the end, an offline channel. So I won't ask the motivation question, because I already we already understand the question to that.
Sure, sure.
But what do you think are the driving forces of looking at direct mail again? Because as you said, consumption of digital entertainment is increasing. So most of the advertisers think we should spend more money on digital ads. Why suddenly, like I have my assumption, but why does suddenly or is suddenly direct mail an interesting marketing topic, or even innovative?
Yeah, that's a great question. First, I have to give my sort of ancestral, or you know, my predecessor tributes. So, direct mail is what a lot of us in digital ad tech or digital advertising or performance advertising we owe a lot of our best practices to the advances and best practices in direct mail. Direct mail is one of the most performant advertising channels. Response rates are 6 to 9%. Compare that to a 0.02% click-through rate. It's expensive to get a piece of direct mail to your house, but once it's there, it's highly impactful. We see on average a piece of mail sits on somebody's counter for 17 days. And that's if it's relevant, right?
Yes.
If it isn't, it goes right in the recycling bin. So I think when you look at direct mail, there's a lot of very, very relevant characteristics to say this is a high performance, highly targetable, and very effective advertising channel. And it is a, you know, I think on the last numbers I looked at were globally $40 to $50 billion is spent every year in direct mail. So it's huge. And that could
crazy.
Be
they talk crazy. About $1 billion in retail media, the hot new thing when you say $50 billion lies a year in direct mailing.
It's crazy. Amazing. It's amazing. And it works. It really works. So what is missing, I guess, is sometimes the question. Direct mail has a huge number of strengths. The challenge is it takes a long time to traditionally set up campaigns. So say eight to 10 weeks to get a direct mail campaign up and running. Two is it's a very fragmented.
So that wouldn't work with a typical digital strategy of saying, can we get this campaign live yesterday, please?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Or you get the banners in 2 weeks, but please get the campaign started yesterday, right? Like,
yeah. And even if you send a piece of mail right now, first class in the US, it'll take, you know, between 3 and 7 days to get to you. So how does that fit with the speed of consumer, the speed of the consumer's consideration cycle and the pace of the economy? It's really interesting. So how do you take, so one is direct mail tends to be rather slow. Two is it tends to be quite fragmented. So you have a data modeling service, you have a print shop, you have a mail or logistics company. There's a lot of different ways to get it out there. And so what we've tried to do is we tried to take the best of direct mail and digital, put those things together and make a more effective channel that we call programmatic direct mail as a result. So what we do is from the minute you or I show interest in a product or service from one of our brands, a piece of mail goes out to you automatically within 12 to 24 hours. And that happens every day for every day that mail is sent for hundreds of brands, for hundreds of thousands of campaigns every year. So
To understand the process, I show an interest, or if I show an interest in a brand that works with you and you get access to that data point that says, this is Adrian or that's his email and he engaged with, I don't know, Tesla, for example, and assuming that they work with you, you have the possibility to send a direct mail specifically to me?
Correct. Yeah. So our flagship product was website retargeting into direct mail. So just like Criteo works,
we
see you browsing around on Tesla's site, although Tesla doesn't do a lot of paid marketing. So one day we'll get them.
It was just an example, but
Elon's very distracted for some reason right now. So you're on Tesla's site, you look at a couple cars, and then we see the website browsing data. We can match it with a postal address. How do we do that? It's because we have a large in-house data asset that we call the Pebble Post Graph. The Pebble Post Graph connects online intent with postal address, with purchase, and that allows us to understand what you're interested in, where to send a piece of relevant mail, and then how to close the loop and understand if you made a purchase or not and attribute it back to the campaign. So that's how our system works.
You know, I have to ask you a question, although it's a bit more technical or specific. I'm recording from Israel. You're in the United States, but we work mostly with German clients, or this is where my company is based. And the question is, how did this Pebble Post Graph exists, or I would say, how does it adheres to privacy legislation? So I know in the US you have the California Privacy Act. In Europe, it's GDPR. And I assume you're not active in Europe yet.
No, nope, we're just US based.
Just US based. So how does it play with these kind of privacy legislations? Are there limitations? Are you expecting limitations?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So what we've done is we are compliant with all of the current U.S. legislation and the legislation that is coming down the pike that we are aware of. So CCPA, CPRA, CDPA, and you know, there are
many acronyms.
Yeah, many acronyms and many different state-specific regulations. So our chief privacy officer and head of technology have spent a lot of time with the teams making sure that we are completely compatible with all of those things. That's the first thing. The second thing is we will only work with brands that are also compliant with those policies. So if we were to work with a, let's call it a Weight Watchers, for example. So Weight Watchers is one of our great brands. We work with Weight Watchers and they must be CCPA compliant so that we know that they have the right to pass us the intent data that we use to do the targeting of our services. So,
right, so you need to make sure that the brand also collected the intent data in a legal way so you can actually put it to work.
Yes,
it's a double opt-in or whatever is necessary in order to get the data activated.
Correct. And then what we do on top of that is at a brand or consumer level, we have a lot of mechanisms for them to opt out. So if it's a consumer that wants to directly opt out of our services, we can process that. If it's a brand that has a list of consumers to opt out of their marketing, we can also process that. And so we've built in-house capabilities and we work with OneTrust and some other vendors to make sure that we're compatible from soup to nuts. So something that we take very seriously, as you could imagine, because it is a heated topic. But at the same time, we are only active in the U.S., so not, and we exclude any European traffic from our services. So we're not subject to GDPR today.
I wanted to keep that question for the end. But are there any internationalization plans? Anything that you can hint of, or are you currently focused?
You know, it's short. We talk about this every so often. It's a great question, Adrian. We feel like we still have so much opportunity in the U.S. It's such a huge market. Programmatic direct mail, I would say, is a growing but still nascent category where we're seeing brands increasingly turn to us as a complement to Facebook and Google. And how do you find another channel that's highly performant at scale that can give you excellent results? We haven't talked about performance yet. So we feel like we have a lot more room to grow here. When we do expand, things that we'll look at are, can we deliver the same type of services or the data policies and privacy regulations similar? How do we build that equivalent data asset in a new market? What is the postal system like? So some postal systems are more reliable than others. And then do consumers, are consumers receptive to marketing mail? Because not all markets have marketing mail that is acceptable. So in Japan, for example, very, very amenable to marketing mail, but in other markets, they may not be. So those are some of the things that we'll think about.
Interesting. Thank you for being open about it. So yeah, before we talk about performance, because I think the next step we'll go and talk about how does it fit in the media mix, right? Because there are always other channels involved and it's even dependent on other channels at a certain level. We talked at the beginning, you mentioned the reasons why this is effective. And I want to kind of make two arguments and see what your thoughts about it, your thoughts around these topics are. One is you mentioned that the home is a very critical point. It's where we make the decisions, right? About travel, not only food consumption, but right, car, TV, travel, holiday. I think that COVID and the situation we had in the last 2.5 years only made it more important because we spend more time at home, and it's not anymore that we deal with these topics with our partner, or spouses, or flatmates only in the evenings, but throughout the entire day because we're exposed to that a lot more. And second, trying to think why this would be so effective or even more effective now, I would argue that there is a saturation to how much our eyes can capture. You know, when I go to a website and I see 17 banners screaming at me, or I watch TV and I see, I don't know, like five, say linear TV, right? Sports linear TV, still see 15 minutes of ads. How much can I absorb? Not too much. But if I get a sync effect, we also talk about it in different digital channels. If I see the same one in multiple channels and now I get a physical piece of ad in my home and it's not the first time I see it or engage with that brand, I can understand why, you know, these two factors make it even more effective, right? Talking about performance nowadays.
Yeah. Gosh, it's a great question. So how do we think about that? Well, one thing that we talk to brands a lot about is that programmatic direct mail picks up where digital leaves off. So if you think about a triggered behavior that results in exposure to an ad, in digital, that can happen instantaneously, as we were joking about before. So You have a situation where the moment you're interested in a pair of shoes, you can see that shoe ad, and then it follows you around the internet and you tell your family how irritating it can be. And that's where, but that's an impact, right? And that's very powerful. We tend to see the most conversions in the first 48 to 72 hours in those digital environments. So after that time, the conversion rate really drops off. And so that's the day that your Pebble Post programmatic direct mail piece arrives in your mailbox. And so that, to your point, is when you sort of say, okay, I got the email, I saw the interstitial ad, now I can choose whether or not I want to bring this piece of paper into my house as a miniature salesperson, right? So that is one way we think about it, is that programmatic direct mail picks up where digital leaves off.
Great. And now taking that a step further into, you know, the media planning and performance. So when a client comes to you, how do you combine your offer to the existing media plan? Do you dig in, look at other channels work specifically, or how does that process work? Because that's really interesting. Like I said, it's not a standalone channel. It depends on the frequency and the life cycle of other channels. Really curious to hear about that.
Yeah, I don't know that we would think about Pebble Post as dependent on other channels, but we think of ourselves very compatible, I would say that.
Yeah, compatible is the right word. You know, I think it's because I'm not English native, I think that's the right definition.
Well, but I get what you mean, I agree with you. Maybe it's worth talking about how our measurement works. So very briefly, how our measurement works is once we send a piece of mail to home, our platform can then do what we call a transaction match analysis. So we'll compare the list of households we mailed to the list of households that made a purchase. And that data is supplied by the brand. And based on that, we can deduce that that this household, having received this message, made this conversion. So it's just the same thing as a post view conversion tracker in digital, where you see an ad, a conversion pixel fires, and you track the conversion and you claim credit as the vendor. In addition to that, we add in a holdout group for every campaign that we run. So we're always doing an incremental lift study on an automated basis. This is built into our reporting. So if you're running a campaign with us, whether it's retargeting or audience modeling campaign where we're just looking for net new customers, or a retention campaign, we can compare the list of folks we've mailed to with the list of folks that we didn't mail to, and measure the purchase behavior and therefore determine the amount of incremental lift. So in a nutshell, we do performance reporting and lift reporting, and that's how we show a brand how we're incremental and complementary to their existing channels. And it's very clean. And by the way, if a brand doesn't want us to do the measurement, which some brands, don't want the vendor to judge their own homework, and we integrate with the various measurement providers, and we send them over our raw data. So so that's how the performance works. And now I can't remember the original question that you asked me, because I got so excited about performance.
It was just about the media mix and how it works with complementary channels.
Got it. So that is how that, thank you for reminding me. So that is how, that's how we think about it, is we do two things. One is before we even start working with a brand, we'll ask them some basic information so that we can project the performance that we think we'll be able to get for them with programmatic direct mail. And that tends to be very accurate. So they give us their average website conversion rate, the number of visitors on their website, the size of their customer file, average order value, things like that. And we'll use that, we'll plug it into our platform, and out will pop a ROAS or CPA number and sometimes Lyft. So we'll do those projections to give brands some confidence. And then once we run the campaigns, we'll show them what the actual performance was. And then based on that, they'll decide on how they can sort of adjust their media mix with us.
Okay. I'm smiling through the entire episode because it's just so weird. Like, there's a dissonance between talking about direct mailings, but using ad tech and programmatic expressions and catchphrases. And it's just incredible. You know, it's like he's talking about direct mailing, but as if we're talking about online ads. So
yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's what was so cool about Pebble Post where in 2019 when I joined is it is a digital ad tech company. Everything is the only thing that isn't digital is that we don't use the RTB protocol because there's no SSP. There's no, I can't even remember the terms anymore. There's no optimizing of a supply path. Our supply chain is the U.S. Postal Service. And instead of a 100 millisecond bid response times, we run a daily modeling process that outputs a data feed to a print network, you know? And so we think of ourselves as a data decisioning and measurement platform that uses physical media to drive conversions, but everything else really resembles digital ad tech.
I'll give another angle to it. I had a discussion about ATV and connected TV because we deal mostly with banners, display, native, stuff like that. And I said, I want to get a guest on the podcast to talk about these topics because even I don't understand all the differences sometimes. Yes, excuse me, right? I don't get it. And I had a conversation about these topics and we said, or the person who I was talking to said, look, doesn't matter which type of digital video you're buying, there's still a misunderstanding in the market because you're selling a digital product to TV linear buyers and you're not speaking the same language. You're talking about CPM. There's not even click-through rate, right? Because I once was asked by a client, what was the click-through rate on a digital out-of-home campaign? And I said, I don't know. Nobody high-fived the sign. So basically, they don't speak the same language. And although here we talk about, again, a non-digital channel, we speak the same language. They are measurements. I can compare them to any other marketing channel that I'm running, and I can see the results. I can see the added value and the return on ad spend. And that's, to me, still mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And I should have said up front, I would say the overwhelming majority of our brands are spending digital or channel-agnostic budgets. We don't tend to do a lot with traditional direct mail buyers because what we do is fundamentally different. I mean, they're doing very sophisticated things, very sophisticated data models, and a lot of test and learn. There's nothing wrong with the traditional direct mail. Obviously, it's a huge channel, but we are, most of the time, we are working with brands that have already committed to an omni-channel or customer-centric digital kind of marketing strategy. And we are the latest channel that they have kind of slotted in addition to CTV and social and email and call center and other things. And so we're just part of that addressable omni-channel suite. That's how we work with most of our biggest brands.
Are there any other characteristics to kind of being a good client or a good partner? I mean, you mentioned right now the kind of the media mix and their approach, but what would make a good candidate to become a client of Pebble Post? I assume that has to do something with spendings and reach and...
Yeah. So we work with, today we really focus on B2C. Not so much focused on B2B. Our data set is really strong on B2C. As long as you have a large website presence, a direct relationship with your consumer, and performance goals that you are clear on, we can work with you. We tend to do a lot of e-com and retail business, but we also work with the travel vertical, financial services, wellness, education, nonprofit, some politics. And so we have a variety of different verticals that we service. But in general, you know, we're working with upper mid-market or enterprise brands that are that have some channel diversification and are looking to expand and spend at scale.
And from a budget perspective, if, you know, we have a brand and we want to start working with you, what's the range that makes, you know, makes it possible, I would say?
So effective. Yeah, effective, right?
Effective is more important than possible, right?
Yeah. I mean, so everything that we do is data-driven. So we look, even if a brand wants to test something, we look to build a statistically significant test. And because mail is, you know, it's, we're not talking about CPMs here. It's, you know, 50 to 75 cents to send a piece of mail to home. And that is, that's different economic, right? So generally speaking, we'll start with, you know, $15,000 or $20,000 for a couple months per month to run some combination of lookalikes, retargeting, and retention, depending on what the brand's objective is. And then based on that and the performance results that we get, we'll recommend a larger marketing program. But I would say most of our established brands are spending, you know, between $500,000 and a couple million bucks a year. That's kind of where we're seeing a good, that's where the consistent kind of ROI really is clear.
I have to say something, not about the budget, but about the pricing, because we raised it also in, you know, in the episode with Dr. Fo about fraud, is that advertisers and programmatic got used to low CPMs, right? So 75 cents is sometimes the price an advertiser will believe that he's paying to show his ads 1,000 times. I would question if any of them is viewable to a human with that price. But that's also something that changes here in the real world. Like, we can argue how many people, I don't know, throw the direct mail or don't use it or ignore it at home. But the truth is, cross programmatic platforms, cross marketing channels, if you want to reach human attention, you can buy it at a price of scale. Like, it can be that discounted. And I used to say, at least, you know, from a philosophical perspective here, I say the most expensive product is usually not necessarily the best, but the cheapest is more like, there's almost always something that makes it the worst product. Yeah. There's always like a hidden problem that you can't identify, or you can, but you don't want to.
My father always says you get what you pay for. So
absolutely.
No. You know, it's interesting for us. Look, I'm familiar with Dr. Fu's work and his shining a light on what was a massive kind of unspoken truth about digital advertising, which is it looks verifiable, but there is fraud, bots, and very difficult to measure. And it's a constantly changing, adapting, you know, system that is very difficult to get a handle on. The nice thing about our channel is that we are mailing to a U.S. household, and the U.S. Postal Service and us, we both built proprietary technology to ensure that an address is deliverable. So using a mover's file and other things, if an address doesn't exist, we can't send a piece of mail to the address. So regardless of if an event is generated by a person or a bot or what have you, if we can't resolve it to an address, we can't mail anybody. So it really mitigates a lot of this kind of issues of fraud and bots, et cetera. The second thing is, when we talk to brands about what we do, once we do the contract negotiation, allocate the budget, we're really talking about ROI. That's the only thing that we talk about. And everything is tied back to a verified transaction, a return on ad spend, and a lift metric. And if the performance isn't there, advertisers won't spend. So you could imagine, for us to be able to beat marketing goals for 97% of our advertisers, which is what we do, at a 50 to 75 cent rate, means that our performance is off the charts. And if you think about mail, if you get a piece of direct mail today, at least in the US, if it's relevant to what you're interested in, there's a high likelihood it'll make it past your front door, at least. right? And we call that surviving the sort. Survive the sort. You know, you're sorting into the recycle bin versus what you're going to put on your... And so if you can survive the sort, then you are in a great place. And the performance shows that. We have phenomenal performance. And that's what keeps brands coming back.
Yeah, because there's a level of acceptance. Once you've made a decision, right, as the person bringing it home, you brought it home. So there is already a different attitude towards the same effect as you have when you build your own IKEA furniture. You build it, like you brought it home. So it's not anymore this kind of third-party ad that was thrown at me while watching a video, but I was the one that actually carried it into the apartment. It was not laid, like placed there by anybody else.
Yeah.
So also clever, really interesting psychology behind that.
Probably, it's so fascinating because it really has to do with consumer choice. You choose to go to the website of the brand you're interested in. You choose to bring that marketing message over your threshold into your living room or dining room or whatever. You choose to make the purchase or not. Every point you're choosing, at no point are we pushing messaging. So I think for me, that's it's fun to have a value prop that's not only friendly to a brand, but also also a little more compatible to what consumers are asking for.
Super interesting. All right. So reaching or getting closer towards the end of our recording, I wanted to raise a question about sustainability, right? And I know that you also have a section in the website about it because I was researching about it before, but direct mailing, paper, delivery, talk to us a bit about sustainability because I'm sure that a lot of advertisers would raise that question as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's something that's very core to how we've designed the system and what we think about. A couple things. One is, you know, we estimate that based on our performance and its premium over traditional direct mail tactics, you know, we can send magnitudes less mail volume for every dollar of revenue generated than other channels. So we're a more efficient channel on the one hand. We partner with our suppliers to have sustainable options, so bamboo, et cetera. We partner with FSC and One Tree Planted. So for every set of mail that we send, we make sure there are trees planted. And then at the end of the day, when you think about paper, you know, paper is an interesting commodity because it comes not from old growth forests, but from lumber that is, harvested on a regular basis. And so I'm not going to sit here and say it's good to chop down more trees, but you're able to replenish what you use in a very effective fashion. So between the partnerships we have, the formats we use, the efficiency of the advertising medium, we believe that we can kind of stand side by side with the greenest options to really be to really give brands something they're looking for. And we actually work with some Series B corps that have very high standards on sustainability. It's part of their mission, and so we make sure that we help them promote that brand message in everything that we do, from the FSC label to the type of paper that the piece of mail is printed on, and et cetera. So it's something that's very core to what we do.
Appreciate that feedback. Again, in digital, we rarely, so it's easier to raise that question to someone like you because you print and use paper and use, the US Postal Service. In online or digital, we rarely ask that question, although we also have server capacities, labor costs, we have fraud, which is a problem, electricity. So I'm just saying sustainability is important across all industries. It's just easier to ask here. And I think the answer about replenishing and the trees really makes a good point here, because if you use paper and you kind of replant, the main thing you use to make paper, right, which are trees,
right,
then at the end, you're kind of reinvesting in back to the planet. And that sounds like a sustainable approach to me. I can't judge more than that, but I'm just sharing here my personal personal opinion.
It's something that we've made some progress on, and we have some exciting plans to double down on that. But I think we can always do more on that front.
Well, it's never enough. But on the other side, every step that somebody takes towards sustainability is, you know, welcome and blessed.
And to your point, Adrian, by the way, there are some amazing new companies like Brian O'Kelly's new Scope 3. You know, that he was the founder of AppNexus. And the CTO at Right Media a long time ago, he founded Scope 3 to bring light to this across the entire ad tech industry. How do we measure our sort of sustainability score and carbon output and things like that? And how can we work to optimize it so that a brand that's engaged in a multi-channel advertising initiative can kind of judge their impact based on the decisions they're making, not just on ROI, but also on the impact to the environment. So I think what he's doing is pretty cool. I think it's a little early, but definitely looking at that one pretty closely.
I will definitely take a look at that. Thank you for that. Didn't know about it. I know Brian because I used to work with AppNexus before it was called Xander when he was still on board. So I'll definitely read about it more and get to know it better. Jacob, is there anything you'd like to address or anything that I haven't asked you or a point that we haven't covered? If you have, now is the opportunity.
No, I mean, it's been a really fun conversation. I guess, you know, coming off of the beginnings of our 2023 planning with my executive team and the board, I think we're also thinking a lot about the future, and there's a lot of things coming down the pike that are very interesting. So as third-party cookies go away, we're starting to contend with that as an industry, but I don't think the answers are very clear. As consumer regulations change, how does that impact? I mean, we've really matured as an industry in some really fun ways. One of the things that I get excited about for PebblePost is because we don't rely on cookies, it's all resolved to a household. We are thinking about how do we do more to power advertising in the next phase of this industry's growth. And I think all your guests, I listened to some of your other awesome episodes, and I think all your guests are kind of tackling the same problem in a different way. And so it'll be fun to see how all this stuff comes together, but definitely looking forward to giving you an update sometime.
Absolutely. I'd be keen to hear that. I tell that to all my guests because our industry changes so fast, especially now. Yeah. And I think looking back or listening back in a year or a year and a half, I think we'll see things not completely different, but further away. And that would definitely be a good opportunity to see how close we are to what we imagine it would be or how different it is. Yeah. To our expectations. Amazing, Jacob. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
I have no doubt that our listeners will find it very, very valuable and eye-opening to not think of digital channels just in online, but to look at other opportunities, and that sometimes even more or even very traditional marketing practices can find new relevance in media mixes using the right, I would say, business model and the right technology model. So thank you again.
Amen. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great to talk to you, and best of luck with the podcast. You got some great episodes already.
Thank you very much. Take care, Jacob.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Add to the Bone. Important question. Was I right or was I right when I said this was one of the most interesting episodes we've had in the podcast? So if you found this valuable too, like me, go share it with your colleagues, bosses, whoever you think will find it as valuable as you, or will just enjoy it because that was a cool conversation. As usual, a reminder that we are an independent production of IndieAd, and our goal is to deliver high value and knowledge to our digital marketing and advertising community. And if you enjoy what we do, if you like it, we'll ask you to spend 10, 15 seconds, not more. Simple task, just go to your favorite podcasting app, give us a 5-star rating so we can, you know, reach more audiences and do more and better content for you. It's a good deal, right? Thank you for doing that. Till next time, see you then.